This is Witches, Bitches, and Dead People with intuitive oracle Jamie Hearn. Jamie stirs the cauldron with witches, shamans, healers, psychics, and mediums who bravely share their power and give you insight into what conversations with dead people really look like. It's probably not what you think. Sometimes hilarious, sometimes macabre, and always informative.
Hello and welcome back to Witches, Bitches, and Dead People. I'm Jamie Hearn, and today I'm super excited to dig into all things ancestral with Ben Stimson. Ben is a therapist, author, folklorist, storyteller, and spiritual practitioner. Originally hailing from the United Kingdom, Ben grew up in Ontario, Canada. He's been involved with the magical community for over 20 years, with deeper involvement in a selection of spiritual traditions, including, he's going to help me with what type of Hinduism?
Of course, it's Advaita Hinduism, non-dual Hinduism.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. You just tell us the list. Druidry is the one I'm most interested in, but none of
course. So, well, and I talk about them all in the book, so people who end up going into the book will know more about them. So, I've also been involved with Lakumi, which is to a lot of people going into magic shops, they'll know it as Santeria. Espiritismo, which is French spiritism. In a Caribbean context, and then apart from that, also British tradition, which is Druidry and folklore tradition, and so that's where really my folklorist side comes in.
Super interesting. So I was drawn to Ben because of this really cool book that he just published. So can you share with us about your book?
Of course, definitely, yes. Yeah. So my book came out in September. I feel like it's just, I don't know, it feels like a lifetime ago that I wrote this, but I started writing this in January 2021. So it's been a long time since I started putting this together and it actually coming out. So the book is all about ancestor veneration. And a lot of people kind of whittle their eyebrows at that thing, ancestor veneration. What is ancestor veneration, right? And I think when, depending upon who I'm talking to, it will either click or it will be such an alien foreign concept. But it's something that we actually had in Western culture a very long time ago, before the funeral industry kind of took over, before kind of Protestantism started removing us from having an active relationship with the dead. And so the genesis of the book really came from my psychotherapy education. When I was training in psychotherapy, I had some incredible encounters with my own ancestors as part of a family history project I had to do as part of that training.
And
it was really cool. It was really cool. It's one of those things I think every psychotherapist, every helping professional should do, is diving into their own family history and looking at the patterns of the culture that you exist with, right? You know, things that happened four generations ago are still reverberating even now. And I think anybody who's been in a therapy chair will realize that, right? But I often think in Western culture, we kind of relegate the dead and the ancestors to in the past. We don't see them as being present now in the world with us. And that's really what the whole basis of the worldview of ancestor veneration is. Ancestor veneration is not mourning. That's the most important part of the book. It isn't a mourning tradition, because we're not necessarily... when engaging with this kind of spirituality, we're not sitting there mourning the loss of somebody, we're actually just changing the relationship. So if you go into a lot of different cultures around the world, they have a place still for the dead in their homes, in their lives, in their businesses, right? You go into a Chinese restaurant and see an ancestor shrine behind the counter, you know that the ancestors are still with them, and the relationship continues just in a different way. So what this book really was all about was to kind of essentially introduce this idea of a continuing relationship with the dead as opposed to it being like how we would relate to the dead in the West, which is that they're just a void. They're just in some far off distant place and we don't have access to them anymore. And that's what causes a lot of our trauma around grief and mourning and whatnot. Well, so I was really bridging two of my life passions there.
I love that. I mean, I think the traditional approach to death is so overlaid by the control of structured religion in the West primarily. And I don't relate at all, like is traditional in our society to death. Like my father's been gone 12 years and I have a better relationship with him now. We did a ton of healing after he died because he didn't have that human lens to see things through. So it really, it was the fast track to working through some of our shit, but it was really effective. So I love this approach to how you continue relating with those ancestors and where it comes up. This is, yes, is super cool. Tell us really a little bit about your own experience with your ancestors.
Of course. So this one is a big part of the book as well. The ancestor work that I've done over the years really tied in with some of the traditions I've been part of. Lukumi and Espiritismo, particularly being African-based traditions, really, really strongly connected in with ancestor and ancestor work. But even before that, I had a strange relationship with my ancestors. Because I grew up in Ontario, Canada, I think a lot of people can tell I'm not from here originally. I have an accent. And I originally came from the United Kingdom. And when I was 8 years old and we moved over, that was it. My parents didn't go back. We never visited. I think I've only been back once, and my mom has gone back, but my dad has never gone back in almost 30 years. So I was removed from the context of my living family over there. I have an older sister who is constantly coming over and visiting us, but we never go and visit her. And my whole extended family, the places that they lived, the cemeteries that they're buried in, I didn't have access to anymore. And so for a long time, my ancestors were very vague. They were a vague sort of idea as opposed to an actual reality. And I mean, to even make it even worse, we left before several of my grandparents died. And so I never saw my grandparents again. I never had a chance to go to their funerals. I never got closure with those people. And so I would say in many ways, the ancestors have been a big part of my own life journey because of the shock of that culture shock that I endured when I was a kid. And so when I really started diving into this sort of work, it came as a great relief to me because I suddenly realized and it clicked for me that I don't have to just see them as a void anymore. I can actually have a relationship with them now. And one of the biggest experiences I had, apart from actually living ancestor work out all the time in a living spiritual practice, but I actually had a chance to go to a Dum Supper, which is a more pagan tradition. It's a tradition of setting up a place setting for the dead, enjoying with other people food while commiserating and connecting with the dead. And I had the experience of meeting my grandfather in that, and a real visceral experience of chatting with him and connecting with him and communicating with him and asking him several questions that I needed answering. And the response I got, whether or not it was just up here or whether or not it was something else, I don't know, but it was powerful. And it was like having a cup of tea with my grandfather who I'd met previously 25 years ago.
I love that. So do you ever invite him for tea and literally set a place setting for him and have a cup of tea for him?
All the time. So the big thing with this book, so a lot of, and I'll get up on my pedestal here. I'm assuming that a lot of people listening to this are going to be of the pagan community, witchcraft community. And I think one of the biggest issues with the Western witchcraft community is that we have gotten into our heads that we can only relate to the dead at certain times of the year. Right, Samhain, Halloween, that era of the year. And that's actually false, right? That's a worldview, right? People can practice that way. Absolutely. I'm not saying that. But what I would say is that we can have the dead with us all the time. And living, so when I was practicing Lukumi, when I was involved in that tradition, I was actually living with the priest that I was learning from as a roommate. And he was living his spiritual tradition all the time. He was an initiated priest of Oshun, and his whole house was just, it was very spiritual centric. And we had an ancestor shrine that we would put food down to almost every day. Whenever we made a big meal, whenever we got something special, we would do a little spoonful to the ancestors, put it down, set it to them, right? Set it with a candle, set it with a cup of tea, a cup of coffee. And that was a regular occurrence. It became a chore, but it was one of those like, oh, go put food down at the ancestor shrine, right? But it brought them into the home. And when they're in the home, that's when things really start to take off, because they're not just relegated to a certain time in the year when they're allowed to come back, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me to compartmentalize when you can connect with your ancestors or any crossed over energy. It all comes when it's relevant, in my experience. Yeah. So I love the idea of having something present all the time for them.
Well, and it's very natural. When you look around the world, what I did with this book, is my academic background, I just have to do cross analysis. I looked at many different cultures around the world, and they all had one thing in common, which was that for the most part, they all had the dead involved in their lives every day, right? There were certain boundaries put in place for safety, because obviously having life and death energies in the same space, there has to be a navigation between those two, right? I think witches understand this, or I hope witches understand this. But when we look at kind of that relegating to, oh, it's only this certain time of year, right? Oftentimes that comes from a very particular cultural worldview. And in the neo-pagan worldview, that's actually just a creation. It actually is a misunderstanding of the ancient practices that developed in the 1800s. I think Robert Graves was the one who first suggested that that there was a thinning of the veil. That actually doesn't exist before the 1800s. And so it's a misunderstanding of that that's just been taken up in modern practice. You know, when you look at the actual ancient Irish sources where Samhain exists in, there's no such thing as a veil between the worlds, right?
So I'm going to the place where they say Samhain originated, the Cave of Cats.
Wonderful.
And I'm like having an anxiety attack about going in there, but I have to go in there, because if I'm going all the way there, I can't
miss out. You have to. Yeah. That's perfect. Wow, that's wonderful.
Anyway, that's just my little point of anxiety for the day. But
it's all good. Well, I think that's a powerful note too. That's about lived practice. This is about lived practice. And by the sounds of it, like, pilgrimage is one of those really powerful aspects of spiritual practice. And I talk about pilgrimage in this book. A lot of Westerners, I think, we are disconnected from our ancestral roots in that way. Well, not me, because I was born there, but like a lot of people in North America, Australia, other colonized settled lands, they're disconnected in some ways from those roots. And so there's an anxiety. I've heard that before. People going to Ireland, people going to Italy, people going to Greece, wherever it is that their ancestors came from, and feeling that anxiety, right?
So I have an interesting experience. My dad's family is from France, and they emigrated through Quebec in the 1600s. So we didn't have a lot of exposure to where they were from in Europe until my son decided that he wanted to do a project. He was in fifth grade, and instead of asking the grandparents he had that emigrated from Italy, he decided he wanted to dig into my father's family. And I discovered that I had been to the town that they emigrated from. And when I was there, I had a weird experience. I mean, weird in my 16-year-old mind, because when you're 16, right, Everything's weird.
Yeah.
but looking back, all the pieces fell into place, and it was really a powerful connection to a place I didn't know why I was connected.
Mm-hmm. That's huge. That's I hear a lot of stories like that. I'll be honest with you, Jamie. A lot of stories, and you can conceptualize it many different ways. But I think that's that connection point with the ancestors. You're in a place that was connected to them, and they're connected to you. It's like that. Oh yes, you know, that recognition. Oh, you're, and this is where I was there, and your grandmother was there, and so on, and so on. I had a similar situation with a student of mine in one of the classes I was teaching. So before I put this book together, I run a class version of it. So I had a gaggle of about 5 or 6 students. And one of them had been to Italy when they were much younger. And at that point, they were very anti-Catholic. They didn't want to know anything about it. They had some religious trauma. And they were in this little tiny little village in Puglia, right in the middle of nowhere, right? And they were wandering around, and they knew that the church, for one church in the village, was where, that was the ancestral one where all of like their old ancestors had been baptized, all of this, right? But there was a small side chapel, and she felt like she was connected to that place, and so she went in. Now, she said that she had religious trauma. She didn't feel comfortable with the Catholic Church, nothing. But it was something about this building, so she wanders in, and from weirdly out of nowhere, this little old Italian nun, and she doesn't speak Italian. She's like 3, 4 generations, like 3rd generation, so her Italian is not strong. But she, this little old nun comes over and gives her a little candle to go and place at the racks of candles, right? The offerings.
Yeah, and I have no idea what the
I can't think is. What it is. I know what it is, but I can't think. So she's like, oh well, okay. She, to be polite, she had this feeling, okay, she should do this. So she went. And so she was telling her mum later on, she said, oh yeah, that little chapel is where your Nona was married. Right, she was like, you know,
of course,
of course.
Well, on that really cool note, let's take a brief pause, and we will be right back with more from Ben Stimson.
Hey there, fellow seekers of the mystical and magical. Are you through with wading through the endless online noise, only to be met with judgment and skepticism about your otherly interests? Enter Rooted in Magic, your haven of curated wisdom and fantastical knowledge. Join our private membership program designed for the magically curious. Explore ancient secrets and metaphysical wonders. Unlock the mysteries of your true self in a 100% judgment-free zone. At Rooted in Magic, you're free to journey towards self-discovery at your own pace, supported by a community that understands and celebrates your uniqueness. Visit our website today and start your journey to understanding who you are, why you're here, and where you're going. Embrace the magic within you at rootedinmagic.com.
Welcome back to Witches, Bitches, and Dead People. Let's dive in with more about the really cool connections that we can find when we do some ancestral work. Ben, you said you teach classes, and tell us more about some of the things that you offer to the world.
Absolutely. So a lot of my work tends to be around psychotherapy, around counseling and that piece. But the classes that I teach tend to be more of spiritual nature and folklore nature. So I actually just finished, I completed a bachelor in medieval and classical and religious studies recently. And so a lot of my work right now is focused on folklore. And folklore is ancestral. And this is what the cool connection point between these things. Folklore is tradition. Folklore are the stories that passed down to us. Very different from if we're opening up a book and just reading them. Folklore is what's coming out of our elders' mouths and being handed to us, right? And so I'm doing a deep dive on witches actually at the moment for the British Isles that are found in the folklore texts. And it is so interesting when we start to look at ancestry in a different way. I talk a lot about in this book different types of ancestors. We have our biological ancestors, our family and familial ancestors, but we're also ancestors by many other connections, right? Mm-hmm. One of them is affinity. And so one of the things I've been really connecting in with are the stories of these individuals who were practicing magic and practicing, and literally like the cunning folk, right? The wise people of the village, this huge, big tradition that has relatively disappeared from Western society, but was huge back about 1700s, 1600s. And so really connecting in with these stories and knowing that, you know, perhaps some of my own ancestors were connected with this trade. My great-great-grandmother and my great-great-grandmother were both from Ireland originally. They moved over to the United Kingdom, to England, I should say, where they married my my great-grandfather on my mum's side. And she was an apothecary. She was a herbalist. They had their own little herbalism shop in the mid 1800s. And I always wondered, like, oh, I wonder, something going on there, you know? So it's kind of a neat thing. So a lot of the classes that I teach are information-based. They tend to be lectures. I'm actually teaching, I know we're recording mid-March, but whenever this comes out, I actually just recently talked at the Salem Folklore and Witchcraft Conference, which is happening, and the recording awesome. Of that is going to be live and also available for purchase afterwards. And that's on the medieval monsters and worldview. So a lot of really interesting topics connected in.
Definitely. That's super interesting that you have that connection with the herbalism. And are you drawn to...
No, 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 I wish. It's just something I don't have a green thumb. But what I can appreciate is that service role to the community, because it's very similar to the service role that I serve in now in a professional capacity, right? So I work as a therapist, I work as a spiritual director. Back in the day, the village wise woman, the village wise man, the cunning man, would have been somebody that you went to when you had problems, when you needed advice, when you, right? And I know a ton of cunning folk now who are practicing, not necessarily witchcraft, but cunning craft. And they're serving the same roles in their community. Of course, the community, the village is huge now because it's the entire internet. But it is right. But herbalism is one a forte of some of those people, and that's really, I think, where community comes in. This is where the cool thing is, because even back then, you would have had designated individuals working with particular things. I don't know where you're located, Jamie. Where are you located?
The Northeast U.S.
Northeast U.S. Okay, so that like Appalachia, the tip up that way, Vermont that way.
Yep. Yeah, we're in the Appalachian Mountains. It's called the Endless Mountains, our little
I know the Appalachians. So when you look at the folklore of that whole region, huge region, but when you look at the folklore of that, you have cunning doctors and wart doctors and yarb doctors and all of those different types of practitioners, right? And they all formed a community going back for the past 100 years, 200 years, 300 years. Yeah. You know, if you wanted a wart removed, well, you would be directed to, you know, old Nanny Lightfoot over there. Or if you need something else, then she would send you over to, you know, Doc Grimsby or something like that, right? It's one of those things. And the same is true for, I think, the modern practitioner community now. You know, plants are not my forte, but I know people who where it is. So I have my list of people I can send people to. And I love that it really is a village community, even though it's, you know, massive internet.
Yeah. And I personally would prefer to have a conversation with someone about their experience with herbs, for example, than looking it up online, because they have a different nuance of energy and experience, and who knows what you're getting online.
Well, this is the thing. You can tell when somebody has learned something through like book learning. And I'm one of those people. I learn a lot through books. Yeah. But you can also tell when somebody has a direct practice. I'm trying to think if I've got the book here. Anyways, a friend of mine is originally from England, but moved over to Iceland, and he's been living there now for 7 years. Now, he is a cunning man. He practices cunning craft, Sussex cunning craft. But he wrote a book, a series of books now, actually, on Icelandic plant magic and Icelandic folk magic. And you can tell that he lives that landscape in the way he writes, because he, like, there's all these little anecdotes about when he encountered this little tiny shrub just on the outskirts of Reykjavik, and kind of what his relationship with that little shrub is, right? You don't get that if you're just learning from a book, right?
Right. And I too, I'm a lifelong learner, and cerebral. I do get a lot of information from books, but then I like to apply it in real life. Like, yeah. I've been really drawn to certain herbs over the last couple of years. My husband and I bought a farm that has my grandson is a seventh generation on the farm in my family. So nice. My grandma's grandfather was the originator. So I've been really drawn to the trees and the herbs and the land there. But then I go and read about the herbs that I got the impression from to see what else is out there, because there's a ton of information around every living being.
Yes, it really is. It really is. And we learn more when we have those different impressions, right? We learn more when we can consult in that way. But it's the lived experience piece that's really important, right? If you don't have a connection to those things in a lived way, then it's all cerebral. It can very, very quickly become very archetypal, which is not something I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, no. I mean, you have a really great body of work that you're sharing with the world. Yeah. So where can people get your book? Where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. So you can get the book. So the book came out through Llewellyn Worldwide. So you can get it from their website directly. You can. I always like to say go to your local independent bookstore too, because most of the time they have access to the big publishing distributors that this book is coming through. And it's really nice to connect, again, local community, right? But if you're in the middle of nowhere, or it's just maybe easier for you, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those places. You can also learn more about me at my website, benstimson.com. And I also just I just premiered a Patreon page, which is going to be acting as my class archive. So for a small fee per month, you can buy a subscription and have access to all of my previous bank of classes. I also have more professionally created classes on there, and I'm adding those all the time. I have a podcast also where I invite all sorts of different pagan authors and whatnot on, including a load of people from Llewellyn and the newest publisher that I'm working with, which is Cross Crow out of Chicago. So www.benstimson.com is where you can find that, and all my details are on there. So.
And we'll make sure to include that link in the show notes, so it's easy for people to click on. We have a couple of minutes left, so if there's something that you really want to make sure we touch on and share with the people listening, let's dive into that.
Of course. Yeah. One thing we haven't had a chance to talk about is, again, that living practice. The biggest question couple of big questions I always get asked, which is, how do I deal with an ancestor that I don't particularly like? And what do I do if I don't know what to do? Right. Those are the two biggest ones.
Those are really, really important questions, because like, I have a grandmother who was not a great human, and I still have some resentment toward her, and she's in spirit. And I'm like, oh.
And it's true. We do. When we, this is the struggle when we do any family research interest, history research, is we uncover stories that are not great, right? We uncover things that we're not proud of, that we don't like, right? And so I always, when I'm working with clients around this particular issue, I explore what is the issue at hand, like what is making you uncomfortable. And I often like to say this: one, if we only relate to the dead as they were when they were living, 100, 200, 300 years ago, we're denying them the right to have grown in death, right?
Huge.
Which is big, right? If they're still unhealthy when they're dead, right? It means that they've got some issues that they're still dealing with, in which case we don't have to deal with them. But if we're just blanket saying, well, you were a problem when you were dead, when you were alive, I don't want to deal with you, then we're denying ourselves, we're denying our future generations, and we're denying them the opportunity to have grown, right? I personally believe that death is a space where people can grow. I've experienced that. There's a lot of things that have told me that. But I also want to say that oftentimes the stories that we're handed down are not always altruistic and are not always objective, right? I unfortunately am a black sheep to part of my family, right? I'm a gay person. I came out when I was very young, and there are certain parts of my family in the UK that don't want to know about that, and so I'm a black sheep of that. So if the story that we're handed is that this person was horrible, this person was nasty, this person was not a great person, think about where the source of that story is coming from, right? That's another big piece. I think also, sorry, go on.
No, that's like, oh, Ben, I needed to hear all these things.
Right to the point. Many people will need to hear this because it's the first thing that people ask, right? And particularly in the United States, let's be honest here. I mean, I'm growing up in Canada, I get the same thing up here, right? Growing up in the United States, how many times do people find in their ancestry, oh, there was a slave owner. Oh, there was a person who was colonizer. Oh, there was a person who did this, and so on and so on, right? If we project our shame back onto that individual, then what we're doing is two things. We're denying them access to have the right to grow, but we're also removing the context of our own history. Because if we're privileged because of those people's actions, means then that we're denying that we have privilege because of that. And then we're going to do effed up things, right? We can potentially do effed up things because of that, because we're not taking responsibility of our lives and the context that we exist in now, right?
Interesting point. That's a really, that's a powerful perspective that I think sometimes we can miss that perspective. So thanks for pointing that out.
It's one that I can appreciate because when I look at my own biological ancestry in the United Kingdom, I am literally the product of the history of that nation. I have, in the past four generations, Irish, Northern Highland Scot, I have English, Northern English, and I have Cornish, right, and Welsh. So all of the various different peoples that have made up that island in the past, how many centuries, right, are in me, and I'm a product of the history between all of us. And there's a lot of oppression, right? The Welsh should be oppressed, the Irish should be oppressed, the Scots should be oppressed.
It can get pretty messy with the commingling of all of those different heritage pieces, I'm sure.
Exactly. So it's really important that I need to just like understand that that history happened, and also understand that I'm a product of that. So then what can I do to mitigate that now? What can I do to look at the modern UK and see that, yes, there is a strain in English society which looks down on everybody else on the island, and that shows up in politics, that shows up in Brexit, that shows up in all of these. So what do I need to learn about my own heritage and that history to be a more altruistic human being in society, right? Now, the second part of that is what can people do? And understanding that history and understanding our own stuff with that, this is where then the whole idea of dealing with our own shit comes in, right? The vast majority of people who say, I don't know what to do with my ancestors, are often people who they are dealing with religious trauma. How do I work with my Christian ancestors because I practice witchcraft? Well, I'm just going to ignore all of those and skip right to, 2,000 years ago to my pagan ancestors, right? Those are the ancestors I want to hang out with. You're ignoring. I
mean, they're probably really cool.
They are. But you think how many generations back they are. How many ancestors, like it's something like when you do like two parents, four grandparents, eight great grandparents, and so on, so on. By the time you get back 2,000 years or even 1,000 years, you've got millions of ancestors. You're telling me that every single one of them is a nasty Christian? Come on, right? But people aren't perhaps ready to hear that. But it's about relationship. Who are you relating to? Who are you wanting to relate to? What is the story that you want to? Because that affirms who we are. Oftentimes, stories that we like affirm who we are now, right?
Right. Well, I find the ones that I feel like I want to shy away from are the ones that I really need to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's a fantastic, circuitous, interesting, compelling journey that we find ourselves on.
It's pretty amazing when you get there, right? And again, it comes back to that question, how do we do it? What do we do? So in this book, what I've done is I haven't told anybody what they should do. If I give somebody a ritual or a song or a prayer or whatever, then I'm giving them my practice. I'm not getting them to build their own practice. So this is helping somebody by asking the right questions, by asking the giving the information so that people can make good assessments for themselves. Because I think this comes back to, especially in paganism, that permission. Am I allowed to do this with my ancestors? Can I do this? Am I allowed to do that? And in which case, that then it's not yours, right?
Yeah.
It's about relationship, you know.
I feel like that's granting people permission to be sovereign. Because if you're using my words, you're not claiming your power in this place. So I love that you're giving people the fodder from which to cultivate their own process.
Very much so. Are you Sisterhood of Avalon?
No.
Okay, sorry. When you said sovereignty, I was like, oh, maybe Sisterhood of Avalon. It's another pagan tradition. I know.
Maybe I need to learn about that.
I'll send you the link for it afterwards. Okay. That idea of sovereignty is really big, but I would change and I would challenge one thing you said, which is giving somebody the permission to be sovereign. Sovereign people don't need.
You're totally right. Thank you for pointing that out. I do find that people are fearful of claiming it. So you're right. I need a better word for that. Thank you, Ben.
Well, I'll let you off the hook with that, because I think, again, this is where society comes in. Society is constantly teaching us. And a particularly pagan society, where people are writing books telling people what to do, right? It is that idea of permission giving. Am I allowed to do this? Am I allowed to do that? Am I allowed to do that, right? That's a social thing. That is so subconscious in our subconscious that we, don't even... it's just that I'm a therapist and I pick up on things like that. I'm not bullying you. But...
Well, and there's so much unprogramming that I'm working through, and I know other people are. It's a process that we've all signed up for.
Yeah. And what's fun is that the dead are doing that as well. But what the dead have that we don't have is that they have a longer view, right? So they know, and I had this conversation with my grandfather. My grandfather was very hard on my dad when he was younger. He was very exacting. He was a perfectionist. He was a perfectionist because his own father seemed to just be naturally able to make money. Just money. Like, he could walk through a marketplace and money would just appear in his hands. Not because he stole it, but because he decided, oh, I'm going to sell this thing and then I'm going to trade it for that. And then, so by the time he's worked his way through the marketplace, he's done all these little wheelings and dealings and he's got a profit at the end. My grandfather wasn't that kind of person. He had to work very hard for what he had. And that was not a fault. He was a very hardworking person, but he exacted that on my dad. And so when I sat down with my grandfather, I asked him, what was that all about? He said, you have to understand, if I knew what I know now, after being dead and being able to watch and witness, you know, see things from a broader view, I wouldn't have treated him like that. And that's a huge thing.
It is. And there's a lot of healing potential in that.
A lot of compassion too. Yeah, a lot of compassion.
I just love this work. And Ben, I'm super excited I got to connect with you and get to know you and your work a little bit and share you with my audience.
Thank you. This was lovely.
And I want to thank all of our audience for listening today. I'll see you next week on Witches, Bitches, and Dead People. Peace and badass magic.
Are you wading through the endless online noise only to be met with judgment and skepticism about your otherly interests? Enter Rooted in Magic, your haven of curated wisdom and fantastical knowledge. Join our private membership program designed for the magically curious. Visit rootedinmagic.com and start your journey of understanding who you are, why you're here, and where you're going. Embrace the magic within you at rootedinmagic.com.